This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by Heiter Construction. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending right now.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
So, can't make this up. Unfortunately, this is a reality of the situation where we have a man who has been the subject of a lot of press coverage, started by the show, by the way, being now charged with murder. Alexander J., who was the man who was accused of randomly attacking a nurse, an elderly nurse, in her 60s. As she exited a light rail station in Seattle, in downtown, he allegedly threw her down a flight of stairs. We have video of it. I was on Tucker Carlson Tonight talking about this, only to get away and then allegedly stab a random woman at a bus stop, nearly killing her. He ends up getting arrested. He ends up getting charged. Well, now we learned, moments ago we learned, that he's been charged with murder. Police say he killed a stranger. According to the medical examiner, there was brunt force to the head of a random stranger. And the police are saying it was committed by Alexander J. during that time where he was on the loose. Now, the reason this is especially notable, not just because of the crimes that he's accused of, but two things. Number one, you'll recall that the Seattle Times, while this guy was on the loose, the Seattle Times refused to note his race. Why is that important in this case? Because he was on the loose, and any information that you can get that might allow someone to identify this dangerous person would have been helpful. They chose not to. Would that have made a difference in this case? Maybe not. Probably not. But wouldn't you want to give as much information as humanly possible when someone is on the loose? Number two, we're paying him $250 a day to sit in jail. Now, I don't know if this murder charge will change that, but you'll recall, this is the guy who was ordered into a medical health facility at Western to get a psychiatric checkup. They didn't have a bed for him. And as a result, because the prosecutors rightly wanted to keep him in jail, the judge in the matter said, well, you got to pay him now $250 a day because there isn't a bed available for him. We don't know exactly why that $250 number is what it is, but that is according to the judge what he needed to be paid. Now, I just asked whether or not he's still getting paid. The Department of Social and Health Services is still paying him. Prosecutors argued in court that mismanagement by the Department of Social and Health Services should not be attributed to the prosecuting attorney's office handling the violent assault cases, but the order to pay was always separate from the King County prosecuting attorney's office. And that part we knew. This was not a result of anything that the prosecutor did. This was always a result of just not having room for him. Now, this is disturbing on a number of levels. We'll get more information. He had a hearing scheduled for 2 o'clock. I don't believe he has been seen by a judge yet. But if we get any notable information, we'll certainly deliver it to you. Again, I imagine he's going to plead not guilty through his attorney. I believe it's a public defender. That's normal. And then they'll go through the motion. The question is, will they, on the previous 2 felony cases, which the defense is asking for the court to release him, let's say the judge says, okay, you know what? It's been enough. We're not going to pay you $250 a day anymore. We're just releasing you now. If that were to occur, he would still be held on $5 million bail request on this murder charge. So there are a lot of moving parts here, but this is just another shocking story of a prolific offender accused of a heinous crime, a crime that took the life of an innocent man, if in fact it happened from the hands of Alexander J. These policies that we have in place allow things like this to happen. We can't say that we're shocked or surprised anymore, because frankly, I'm not. I'm disgusted. I didn't see this coming, I suppose, so I guess I'm surprised in a way, but I'm not necessarily shocked. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
So the Congressional Budget Office put out another piece of analysis, and it says, yeah, y'all are going to pay a lot more in taxes, middle class, in order to pay for the Inflation Reduction Act, which doesn't actually reduce inflation. Now, if you make under $400,000 a year, which doesn't apply to me, obviously, it applies to the two people in the booth next to me. You're going to
call for.
Yeah. Well, I'm pointing it out.
Yeah. No, but everybody else in the car is or listening at home on their smart speakers. They're all well aware that that's how the situation is.
Y'all are going to collectively pay $20 billion more in taxes over the next decade. Oh, and those 87,000 IRS agents that they're hiring. Yeah, they're coming after you. So the family that's listening right now in Duval, that small business owner in Covington, that college student has a part-time barista job in Puyallup, you will be paying more taxes, and you can thank Democrats for it. Now, why would they do this right in front of a midterm election? Why would they gamble? They're not gambling. They're not hoping that their lies actually convince you to believe them. They decided to pass this thing before the midterms because they knew they were going to lose the House. They believe they could lose the Senate. And this was the last chance that they had before the end of the Biden presidency to pass this thing. Now, it doesn't mean they're not going to stop lying to you. They're still trying to lie to you. For example, Brian Deese, who's the National Economic Council director, he was on MSNBC today saying, oh, no, tax hikes are not coming.
We're going to make a historic investment in the IRS to make sure that the wealthiest Americans that use complicated accounting and lawyering techniques to avoid paying taxes, that we're going to crack down on that as well. And I want to add, we're doing all of that, notwithstanding some of the misinformation that's out there. We're doing all of that without raising taxes at all on anybody making less than $400,000 a year. As you know, that was a commitment that the president made.
We do know that.
Making good on that commitment.
But he's not making good on that commitment. That is a lie, according to the CBO. Now, I want you to, as he's talking about misinformation and disinformation, understand the disinformation you just heard there. We are being told, and Grover Norquist had a point to be made on this. We'll play it in a second. But there's an NPR story out today. I was on Newsmax this morning talking about it. NPR comes out and says that the 87,000 are going to fill the jobs of vacant IRS agents where veteran agents left. And when you don't have a lot of veteran agents, ones who have just a ton of experience, it's very difficult for them to look into the IRS filings, the tax filings of some of the uber wealthy in this country, because it doesn't get directly sent, reported to the IRS. They go through a bunch of loopholes. They take advantage of the law sometimes. And by the way, that's not illegal. It's actually smart. But when you're cheating, obviously you have to go after those people. But it's very difficult to prove that. And so since they lost so many veteran IRS agents, they started to go after you guys. They started to go after the person who doesn't have a really complicated case file that they have to worry about. So we're being told that the new IRS agents that they're going to hire over the course of the next decade, they will be going after the billionaire and millionaires. Does that make sense to you? They just said that they couldn't go after the billionaire and millionaire cheats because they didn't have experienced enough IRS agents. You're telling me the fresh IRS agents that they just hire are going to be able to do that? No, of course not. Of course not. They are lying to you and they're praying that you don't take it out too much on them come the midterm elections, but they're not counting on it. Grover Norquist was on Fox News about this.
The IRS has long said that they expected that small businesses and independent contractors were their target. They want 1.2 million more audits done here. Well, there are only 700 billionaires and 500 members of the Fortune 500 large companies, that leaves an awful lot of space for 1.2 million audits.
Is he wrong or are we just not doing the math correctly? They've acknowledged how many more audits they want. We know let's say they go ahead and go after every single millionaire and billionaire. There's more audits that they are requesting than actual billionaires and millionaire cheats. We know that. This is so absurd. And what I think bothers me the most about this is that they are lying to your face and they don't seem to care. They'll just call everything else disinformation, which harkens back to the time where they told us it was Russian disinformation about Hunter Biden's laptop. That was not, in fact, Russian disinformation. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. I'll be on Fox News later today with Jesse Waters Primetime. If you're not able to watch it when it airs, it's all good. Head on over to our social media channels. All of them will have it posted. Just text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-877. I'll send you a link. Push that button.
What's trending on the road?
So not only do you have to hang your head in shame if you're someone who drives a Kia, but now you have to be worried about whether or not TikTok is inspiring people to target you for theft. There's apparently a TikTok video or videos going around that shows an easy method to use a tool in place of a key to steal a Kia. Now, I don't know why it's specific to Kias. Obviously, their ignition standards are somewhat different than some of the other ones, but I haven't seen this actual video, but it's one of those. It's not necessarily a TikTok challenge, but it is a tutorial. And the Seattle Police Department is under the belief, we don't know if this is a fact, but they believe that the reason why they've seen an uptick specifically in Kias being stolen, 5 were stolen in July, but this month it was 36 so far. So they're attributing this to the TikTok videos.
Thanks, TikTok.
I'm just throwing that out there. The Chinese are now stealing all your personal information via TikTok, and they're telling people how to steal your worthless car. Why would you steal a Kia?
Kias are nice. Kias are coming up. Kia Optima, real nice. Kia Telluride, the Kia Telluride. Ooh, that's a bad car.
Seattle Times says police are advising Kia owners to hang their heads in shame. I might have added that part.
Oh, police aren't saying that?
No, they're saying to park in lighted or secure areas when possible, which is what they tell you to do in every circumstance in Seattle when parking your
car. Despite your make and model of your car?
Look into steering wheel locks so you can be back like it was 1997 when everyone had those stupid, ugly red things popping out of their cars. And looking into aftermarket ignition kill switch systems. You're not going to do that on a Kia. What are we doing? Who's going to spend money on that?
They're not expensive.
Aftermarket ignition kill
switch. I had a Honda Civic with a kill switch, and it was so great. It was hidden. You'd never find it. It was incredible.
They say two teens were arrested this month after cops got a report that a whole bunch of people in a Kia, which was apparently stolen, had pulled up on a residential street in Capitol Hill, and they tried to steal a second Kia. So they're saying, Kia owners, beware. At the same time, we're telling every other car owner, be aware, because your cars are also getting stolen. This is not news suggesting that the Kia theft is happening in place of other cars being stolen. They're saying in addition to your other car being stolen or your catalytic converters being stolen, they're saying now you got to be on the lookout. What happened to the fun things on TikTok, like people trying to eat a spoonful of cinnamon? That was fun.
Jason, that was like YouTube like 25 years ago.
But that was fun. It wasn't 25 years ago. It was like 2 years ago. That was fun. People choking on cinnamon.
You think the cinnamon challenge was 2 years ago?
It wasn't 25 years ago.
Jason,
I saw it on TikTok.
I think the first time I did the cinnamon challenge, I was like 7 years old.
Yeah, that might. First of all, you're young. But that might have been a thing before, and then it was adopted on TikTok, and then it took off.
Okay, sure. Do I have whatever?
What else can I contribute to TikTok?
I mean, it was
a cup
dances?
With two girls? What?
No.
That wasn't TikTok? That's
not even radio appropriate.
What are you talking about?
I don't know.
I never actually clicked on the video, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, don't. Stay away from it.
What was it? What's a recent TikTok challenge?
Charli D'Amelio is something that's relevant with TikTok. Well, was. I don't know if she is anymore, but she made TikTok
that
relevant.
That was popular when I was 18, so I don't know what you're talking about.
She wasn't born when you were 18.
Oh, shut up. Push the button.
What's trending? The economy.
King County and Seattle are announcing $7 million in retention payments if you work as a child care official or staff member here in the county.
I'm excited to announce $7 million in funding to help retain our valued child care workers.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there wasn't even any passion behind that. That's Dow Constantine, King County executive.
He never has any passion in anything he ever says.
But he's also just admitting to bribing future voters when he runs for governor. That's really all that this is about. The bonuses will go to about 9,000 or so workers. That's based on an estimate by the county.
This investment will provide immediate financial relief to help people stay in these critical child care careers.
Not immediate.
Continue important care for our youngest residents. Ensure that child care workforce is stable.
Yeah, okay. It's not immediate because you have to apply for it. And when has the county or any governmental agency, regardless of who's running it, when have they ever done anything with urgency? Especially when it comes to handing out money. They're very quick to take your money. They're very slow to give it back. So don't tell me that this is going to happen right now. But his argument is kind of crazy when you think about the implications. So you're saying that the healthcare, the staff here for child care workers, we have to retain them. They're going through a staffing crisis, and it's very important that we tackle this. But literally every single industry is going through exactly the same thing. So why not give money to nurses, to police officers? Why not give retention bonuses to talk show hosts?
Some of you might be thinking, well, every sector is struggling to find staff.
I just said that.
But here's the difference. Child care is the bedrock of our economy. Every sector is linked to and depends on child care.
That is Susan Brown. She's the president of Kids Company or Kids County. I don't know. So it's not a very moving argument to me. It's not. They are, at the end of the day, giving handouts to folks that they hope will vote for them in the future. That's all that this is. Why do you think the Seattle City Council gave extra pay to grocery store workers? And it wasn't just them. It was Burien. I think Kenmore got involved. These are moves made because unions are pushing them into them, right? This idea that it was inherently dangerous for someone to show up at a grocery store working by stocking shelves. Oh my gosh, you might get COVID and die. There was this one person who this one time worked at this one Safeway who caught COVID and died. Yeah, sure, it was 67 years old. He had heart disease and diabetes, but still, we have to protect everyone. And so now they're using the same argument. Tell me someone who is not an essential worker. When it comes to the economy, the backbone of the economy, what's not an essential job? Every job is essential. Some jobs are more valuable than others, right? There's no doubt about that. I could do less with one producer. I don't need two producers in the other room. I don't know why we're needlessly paying one of them. We don't need to do that. Peyton's replacement, Max, is in. We don't need you anymore. He's doing his best without you. I'm just throwing that out there. But I mean, every job, if we're arguing that it's about the economy, every job is important. So all we're doing is creating this entitlement complex. Because again, I can imagine someone right now who is working in a warehouse somewhere at Amazon, in a warehouse in Kent or Federal Way or Auburn, I think they have one. They're saying to themselves, hey, I'm working my tail off. It's also COVID hitting me too. What would the economy be if we couldn't actually mail these packages out? All the garbage that you're buying that you don't actually need, where would the economy be without us simple people, the cogs in the wheel, who are already low paid? So does Dow Constantine come out next month and say, actually, we're going to pay for you too. We're going to give you a $1,000 bonus. We'll give you $500 bonus. It's just absurd. Now, $5 million are going to come from King County's Best Starts for Kids levy. More than $2 million are going to come from the Jumpstart Payroll Expense Tax from the City of Seattle. So the City of Seattle tax on payroll is going to be put into this. So it says, if you run a child care business and want to apply for the retention payment, visit the Seattle Department of Early Learning's website. Early Learnings. Okay, that's a great one. How many people are going to even know it's there or even find it? It says every licensed child care program in King County can apply. All staff on the payroll are eligible. Applications have to be within the next 2 weeks. Okay. You better get that application in, and I'm sure you'll get paid soon. It's urgent, according to Dow Constantine, in a very unurgent voice. He was very casual and laid back. He sounded disinterested.
He wasn't even urgent when the pandemic first started, and everyone was urgent.
And there's a pandemic going on, and you know, it's important that you get that vaccine. If there's anything that I say with any more urgency than this, I hope you hear it. It's COVID is serious.
Is he really going to run for governor one day?
Yes, he is.
Is that Jason Tells the Future? No.
Everyone knows it.
Oh, okay.
I don't think that's a... I'm not going to brag about that one. Okay. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Thank you so much for tuning in on this Tuesday afternoon. There is a story that is of unquestionable news value because it is about crime. It looks like it's a random assault at a grocery store on Vashon Island. And we would cover this story regardless of any of the details beyond what I just told you. That's an important story. There's also a secondary story that for me became the primary story because I could not stop complaining about this report. In this case, the reporter, her name is Lauren Donovan. She chooses to unnecessarily confuse absolutely everyone by promoting the idea that gender doesn't actually exist. Or maybe it does, but we're not entirely sure. Because in this case, yeah, it exists. We're calling the person a woman. The victim is a woman. And it is written as woman claims. And then it talks about the assault. However, the woman apparently goes by they, them, their pronouns. Which makes no sense if you're going to say it is a woman. That is just confusing. And when you're talking about they, and then you throw in he, and then you throw in she, it is very confusing. And I thought we would play a little bit from Cairo 7 TV.
I was able to get surveillance footage of that violent encounter.
And by the way, you weren't able to. They gave it to you. I was able to get it.
From the King County Sheriff's Office, and the woman, Desiree, you'll see them in the video.
Okay. Desiree, the woman, you'll see them. Now, what will you see them? Are you talking about the attackers? Because we know that there was an assault.
Desiree, you'll see them in the video. They tell me it all happened in the...
Who is they? Who are you talking to now? Did you talk to the culprits? Did you talk to the assaulters?
Blink of an eye. They were stopping by the Thriftway here on Vashon to grab some grapes around 7 o'clock.
We didn't need to know they were grabbing grapes either, by the way. I know that you think that's a charming little detail to the story that gives it some...
I love grapes.
I mean, grapes.
Thursday night.
Go get cherries.
You know when you... see cartoons and they get hit with a big thing and they see the stars.
Big
That's kind of what happened.
An
I saw stars.
With a thud, Desiree McIntyre crashes onto the tile floor. They say their attacker is just out of frame.
They say their attacker is just out of Desiree. Just say Desiree.
On Facebook, Desiree wrote, "He found me in the store."
He found me in the store? Is that what she just said? Or they just said?
Or cornered me in the wine section.
Why are you assuming the gender of the person who allegedly assaulted you? We're having a story about how gender doesn't exist. You asked the gender, presumably you asked the gender identity of the individual, and the person told you use they, them. Why are you assuming? Why is she assuming or they assuming or them? I don't know. Why is there an assumption going on about the gender of the bad guy?
He grabbed my face. Then he threw my head to the floor.
I don't even know if I can finish this. How dare they? How dare they say that? That is an affront to the individual who may not be gendered at all. Could be a non-binary guy. You don't know that.
Like a baseball. But, like, it was pretty incredible, like, how big his hand was.
Oh, so you're just assuming because he has a big hand, it must be a he. I know women with big hands. Peyton knows women with big hands. He watches women's sports all the time. Massive hands.
On my face.
You didn't lay a finger on him. You didn't raise your voice at him.
No, I didn't get a word out to this guy.
The 27-year-old remembers a sharp poke from behind. They turned around, and there he was in their face, cursing. Desiree says he was complaining they cut him off outside the lumber store a couple minutes before.
It's definitely not a normal interaction to be beaten up in a grocery store, especially not here.
I mean, if this was Seattle, that would be a little bit different. But this is Vashon Island. We don't treat people that way.
Desiree shared with us this photo. In it, their scalp looks swollen and bloody. Desiree says paramedics advise they go to the ER the next morning. As for her conversation with...
Did you just hear that?
Did I miss it?
Did you hear that?
I think I missed it.
Listen.
Bloody. Desiree says paramedics advise they go to the ER the next morning. As for her conversation with Lon...
Her conversation!
Oh, she's
She was so close to doing the they, them the entire time. And she let her guard down in a transphobic way and said she. I am shocked that this made it to air.
Enforcement. According to Desiree, a responding deputy told them...
I can't recommend that you press charges because it's a small island.
Captain Tim Meyer with the King County Sheriff's Office welcomes Desiree's call to further discuss the investigation. I've passed on Meyer's contact information to Desiree.
Okay, now you're her assistant now? I don't get it. This is unnecessarily confusing. And it's one thing to just lean into this, right? I get it. They're institutionally, maybe they're leaning into this, and lots of reporters, this is not even a criticism of Cairo, lots of reporters do this. They don't even make reference at all to the gendered pronoun that doesn't quite match, it's ungendered pronoun that doesn't match her biological gender. They don't even say who prefers they, them pronouns, which as much as I won't do that, I'll say she, I'll say he, I'm not doing any of the fake stuff and I'm not saying they, them, but at least I would understand what's going on by saying, yes, Desiree prefers they, them. You cannot say Desiree is a woman and then say they, them and not address it at all. Now, I guess I understand why they don't address it, because they want to pretend that this is a normal thing to just have people who pretend not to have genders. And it makes them kind of woke. This is even King Five, but it makes them woke because that's how they talk about people. They use their gendered their preferred pronouns, and they don't even make a big deal about it. They just kind of want to normalize it in everyday conversation. Except they don't seem to care that it's confusing. I read one sentence in their written report three times to try to figure out what was being said and who was the subject of what happened. It is very confusing, and it doesn't need to be. It does not need to be.
Is this why you were angrily yelling in your office earlier today?
Screaming they, them at the top of my lungs?
Yeah, this all
they,
makes sense.
Them, it makes no sense! They, them! Doesn't make sense. Was it confusing to you when you saw the story?
Very confusing.
It's very confusing, especially because they don't point it out. I'm just saying, point it out. Just say you're doing it. Just say you're doing it so I don't have to reread parts of the story before I realize, oh, wait, what?
Yeah, just identify whose pronoun is
and
what.
And I've never heard. Is this the equivalent of I use the pronouns she, they? Is that what this is? They don't say she, except for the one mistake. But they identify her as a woman. How is that not confusing to people? And how do they not recognize that as inherently confusing? The one positive in this story is that it gave me a thought. Peyton is leaving us. Tomorrow is his last day.
This is going to correlate to me somehow?
Yes, it is. While you do have a gender, from far away, people don't necessarily know. I'm willing to bet, because you're becoming a teacher, all your emails will have personal pronoun signatures in them. You're going to say, prefers he, him.
I am not going to do that just to spite you. Maybe if I was going to do that, now I'm not going to.
Oh, yes, you are.
And I'm going to email you all the time.
You are going to be forced into it. And the day that you do it, I will know, because I'm going to put in a public disclosure request for every single email that you ever send out of the district that won't be named. Every single email I will get access to, and I will see it. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation, send me a text. Speaking of all this, Pramila Jayapal just introduced a transgender bill of rights. What's in it? We'll tell you when we come back. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Don't forget, I am on Jesse Waters Prime Time. If you're not able to watch it or you missed my segments today on Newsmax and the National Report, I post everything on our social media channels and our YouTube page. You can just text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link where you can go and watch all the videos. Yesterday, Pramila Jayapal, congresswoman from Seattle, very, very far to the left, announced in a press conference her transgender bill of rights. She's not the only congressperson who's on this, but she is one of the leading sponsors. And all of this has to do, in part, with virtue signaling. But for her, it truly is about redefining gender and gender identity. We just talked about it in the last segment. There is a concerted effort to pretend that there is no difference whatsoever between men and women, and that simply presenting as one means that you should be given all of the same rights to engage in whatever it happens to be as someone who's biologically female or biologically male. Now, generally speaking, I believe that we should be respecting everyone. Now, I do think I say generally because sometimes people are just rude and you don't have to respect those people. But we should be nice. We should be kind. We should do unto others what we would do unto us. Is that the term? But I think we just should treat people with respect, including folks who you just disagree with either politically or from a gender identity perspective. But when you look at some of what's in this Bill of Rights, it clearly goes overboard, and the intent is to effectively erase women. That is what they're trying to do. Erase the notion of women or erase the notion of men. So, for example, under this bill, it's a transgender bill of rights. It ensures that transgender folks and people who are pretending not to have any gender whatsoever, non-binary, that they have equal access to services and public accommodations. They would do this by amending the Civil Rights Act, and it would include gender identity and sex characteristics as protected. It would also amend the federal education laws to explicitly say that it protects students from discrimination based on gender identity and sex characteristics. What this means is that you would have the right as a transgender individual to compete in the sports that you want to based on the gender that you identify by. Meaning the conversations we've been having at a collegiate level, even though we've been having a little bit at the high school level, but the conversations we've been having at the collegiate level with like Leah Thompson or Thomas and others, a transgender female who's so biologically male would be able to compete against women. And in this case, against girls. I think that's just inherently unfair. Inherently unfair. Because of the physical characteristics that are innate for males versus females. Males have an advantage, especially when we're talking about athletes at their peak. They have an advantage. The only time in which they don't necessarily have an advantage is during the younger ages, pre-puberty. But once puberty hits, all of those advantages are very clear. Men can run faster, they can jump higher, they're stronger, they have greater lung capacity. No, it doesn't mean that every single time a transgender woman who's biologically male competes against a woman doesn't mean that they're going to win every single time. But they very clearly have an advantage, and this would change that. And the same thing with public accommodations. We've been having the conversation, for example, in Port Townsend with the transgender woman, biological male transgender woman, using the showers in front of young girls at the YMCA. Now, do I think that that individual was doing it with the intent of some sort of nefarious purpose? No, I don't. Or perversion? No, I don't. But I do understand that there are a lot of women and young girls who are either uncomfortable with this and we're just completely ignoring them and pretending that those concerns aren't valid or they just simply don't exist. Or parents don't want to expose their young girls to male genitalia. That is a reasonable position. And you can be kind and respectful and even accommodating for folks who are transgender without dismissing all of the concerns of biological women, or excuse me, cisgendered women. But for Pramila Jayapal, she's basically saying, no, this is just about making sure everyone is happy.
It is a much needed space to salute the resilience of our trans community across the country. And it does outline a very clear vision of what it looks like to allow trans and non-binary people to lead full and happy lives where they can be their full selves.
Where they can be their full selves. That's all that this is about. Well, let's look at what else it says. It says it clarifies that it's illegal to discriminate in employment, housing, and credit based on gender identity and sex characteristics. Now, for the most part, I think most people would agree with that. However, if we're talking about someone who is a biological male who presents as a woman or just claims to be, who applies for a job that is at a battered women's shelter, a nonprofit that works with battered women, I understand why that nonprofit might not want to hire that person. It doesn't make it right. It doesn't mean their position is right, but at least I can understand it. And rather than just forcing them, maybe we should have a bigger conversation. What's missing in all of this? What's truly missing, even though we've been talking about it for a while, an actual conversation where both sides are engaging in good faith. There are a lot of people on our side of this who don't engage in good faith, who I think are unnecessarily mean to transgender people. I think it's wrong. I just think it's wrong. It's rude. It's certainly, to me, it's immoral to do that. But on the left, you either accept their positions or you are called a bigot. You're called a transphobe. You either accept everything that they want, including creating new genders and new personal pronouns, or you're a bigot. That's not acting in good faith. That's trying to force their will upon you and the community. And the only way that they're going to be able to win this particular issue is by forcing it on people, forcing it by brute force. And in this case, at the barrel of a gun. Because if you violate any of these laws, at some point you can be thrown in jail. That's the police coming to arrest you. You get sued, you end up not giving in, and then you end up going to jail. They say it would recognize the right to bodily autonomy and ethical health care by expanding access to gender-affirming medical care, codifying the right to abortion and contraception, which is silly, of course. Transgender people aren't getting abortions or using – they're using contraception, but they're not getting abortion. A woman can get an abortion. But again, this is what I mean when we're talking about the virtue signaling, pretending that a man can get pregnant. A man cannot get pregnant. A transgender man can get pregnant because he is a biological woman. That's the only reason. But it says protecting transgender people from discrimination in healthcare. Now, I don't know what that last part means. Obviously, if you're a transgender patient and you're going to a doctor shouldn't be able to just legally say, no, I'm not going to treat you. However, if they're unwilling to provide, quote unquote, gender-affirming medical care, meaning performing surgeries, meaning giving out puberty blockers, if they don't think that's in the best interest of the patient, especially when we're talking about younger folks, I don't think they should be forced into doing that. The doctor should be trusted. There are a lot of activist doctors out there. Go find one of them if that's truly what you want. And then it says they would enforce the civil rights of transgender people by requiring the attorney general to designate a liaison within the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice dedicated to advising and overseeing enforcement of the civil rights of transgender people. So in other words, we get a transgender czar. And no, we're not talking about Dr. Levine. I don't think any of this is necessary. I think the laws that we have on the books already apply. If you go up to a transgender person and you discriminate against them, either as an employer, as a whatever it happens to be, we already have on the books laws covering gender discrimination. It just might be a slightly different gender than you want to acknowledge you are, but that's already on the books. When we're going into the world of gender identity, it's just rip. It can be used in such a dishonest way by bad faith people. I don't think the majority of transgender people are bad faith. Some are. The same way some biological women and some biological men are just acting out in bad faith. And if you're going to change your identity on a whim or decide you're going to sue because of some slight, someone didn't use your personal pronoun that they didn't even know you wanted them to use, I think that that gets into a very, very slippery slope situation and can be easily abused. And I don't want to set people up for that kind of abuse. But call me crazy. 1-800-4-DON'T-CALL-ME. Shut up. Don't call me crazy. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to join the conversation, send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. We're back with more at the top of the hour.